You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, 45 million people don't have it. Some people who do find it unaffordable or inadequate, especially when disaster strikes. I'm talking about, you've guessed it, our medical insurance. For the rest of the hour, we're going to tackle an issue so big that even the federal government hasn't been able to get a handle on it in health, on health care reform, or even to talk really serious about it since the Clintons did. Back in the day, we're inviting experts to talk about ways to achieve reform from states tired of waiting for an inactive Congress to take action to revamp health care to a group of the country's biggest businesses, the group realizing that this huge bill that they're paying for their workers' health cost is making them less competitive in a world where just about every industrialized country except ours covers their workers with national health insurance. So that's where we're going to start. We're going to be looking at a plan announced just this week that would require insurance for everyone, cover pre-existing conditions, and provide subsidies for poor people. What's surprising about this plan is who's backing it. It's a coalition of big business not known for supporting reform efforts. And joining me now to talk about this plan is one of these big businesses, one of the supporters, a member of the coalition to advance health care reform. Chris Leshevsky is president and CEO of Bumblebee Foods in San Diego, California. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us about why you're forming this coalition now.
Well, you know, I think we've, like you mentioned, gotten frustrated by the government's inability to really enact effective health care. And, in fact, the health care systems in the U.S. today can really be called the sick care programs, because all we really do is we put insurance in place to treat sick people or illnesses, and we really haven't focused very much on the front end or on prevention. And so we're really trying to get together as industry to work with government to basically put in a market-based healthcare system. You know, we don't necessarily believe in socialized medicine. We think that the market influences can achieve a much better system of healthcare. Mm-hmm. But it's clear that we want to have universal coverage for everyone and that there needs to be some level of individual responsibility. You know, if you look at a company like ours, you know, we're very proud that we provide healthcare services and benefits for all of our employees. And yet we're facing double-digit cost increases every year. And I would say that despite these increases, the health care that our employees are receiving are not improving. And so we really want to move to a program where there's a lot larger focus on prevention on the front end, that we cover a higher percentage of the costs related to prevention. Because, you know, looking at the statistics, about 75% of all health care costs are related to preventable activities. And again, the major reasons are related to heart health, they're related to obesity, they're related to diabetes, and they're related to cancer. And while we can't always stop those activities, a lot of them can be prevented by healthier lifestyles up front. They can be prevented by earlier diagnosis and earlier health care. And that's the kind of system that we're proposing.
Well, let's talk about some of the details. What? Give me a bit of a checklist of what you'd like to see.
Well, I don't know if we've got a detailed proposal at this point. I think we're pretty open with working with government officials because it's clear that we can't do this on our own. I mean, this is something that requires mandate from government. And again, I think we're getting a lot of support right now from Governor Schwarzenegger in the state of California. But the five key issues that we want is obviously market-based health care. We mentioned universal coverage with everyone having individual responsibility. We believe there needs to be a program to provide financial assistance for low-income individuals. We believe there need to be incentives for healthier behavior, you know, things for getting people to stop smoking and those that people that are losing weight that may be in an obese situation, providing incentives for healthier lifestyles, and then also providing equal tax treatment such that if individuals are being forced to cover or pay for their insurance because their company doesn't, as a company, we deduct health care for on a pre-tax basis. We believe individuals should be allowed to do the same thing if they're covering their health care costs. Mm-hmm. So those are kind of the five overriding factors that I think are the five core elements that we think are essential to meaningful reform. But other than that, we're open to work with government to try to come up with something that can be pushed through the system.
Are you looking for national leadership or a state leadership among states on this?
Well, you know, obviously we like national leadership, but that's something that's pretty hard to come by.
Yeah.
You know, I think there are several states that are out on the forefront. I do believe Governor Schwarzenegger in the state of California is absolutely committed to pushing through health care reform in the state. You know, being a Republican that he is, he's actually very supportive of the type of program that we're putting together. I think the Democratic leadership in California is in close harmony with what we're trying to achieve. And you know, I think there's still some work to do with the Republican group who do support health care reform, but maybe along slightly different lines than we're proposing. But we do believe that with the governor's leadership and with industry support, we do believe that California may very well be the first state to enact meaningful reform.
Now, you're part of their coalition. It has some huge companies in it.
Right.
You're Bumblebee, Pepsi, Safeway, General Mills, Aetna.
Yeah, we're not the huge one. We're just the little guy.
That's what I'm saying. You're in with the big guys there. And the fact that you're not that big seems to be saying to me that this would also work for small and mid-sized companies.
No question about it. I mean, what's different about Bumblebee than a lot of the groups we're in the coalition with is a lot of people don't realize. I mean, you know our products is tuned. But we're the last domestic producer of canned tuna, of canned sardines, of canned clams. You know, our competition today is all out of Southeast Asia. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're here providing benefits to all of our workers. We're seeing 10 to 12 to 15% increases in health care every year. And I'm competing against products from Southeast Asia where the countries are paying 50 cents an hour for labor and provide no benefits at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so for us, this is not only, you know, we're not only joining the coalition in an effort to provide better health care, but we also want to provide more affordable health care, not only to our employees, but to ourselves, so that we can try to stay competitive and stay in business.
Well, Chris Leshefsky, thank you for taking time to be with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And good luck to you. We'll be watching what happens in Washington.
Sounds great.
And in California. Chris Leshefsky is president and CEO of Bumblebee Foods in San Diego, and his company is a member of this newly formed Coalition to Advance Healthcare Reform. We're going to continue our discussion on healthcare reform, and if you'd like to join in and talk about everything from your doctor's office to the hospital, our number is 1-800-989-8255. Let me bring back my other guest, Karen Politz, research professor, project director at Georgetown University's Health Policy Institute in Washington. Atul Gawande is author of Better, A Surgeon's Notes on Performance, out this year. He's a surgeon at Brigham and Women's Hospital, assistant professor at Harvard Med School in Boston. He joins us today from the campus there. Welcome to the program, Dr. Gawande.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Stuart Altman is dean and professor of national health policy at the Heller School for Social Policy and Management at Brandeis in Waltham, Massachusetts. He joins us today from his office there. Welcome to Science Friday.
Well, thank you.
Let me begin with you, Atul, because I've noticed that you've been very active. Besides your book, Better, you've been writing op-ed pieces in the New York Times about trying to fix our health care system. And you seem to be throwing up your hands a little bit, saying, well, maybe we should just start from the bottom up and work with the kids first.
Well, it's where we are is it's this I described it as the slow growing malignancy. And it's growing so slowly that we don't recognize the problems we have in front of us. So with everybody, you have majority of the country thinks we have a system that's broken, but the majority of the insured are also satisfied with the coverage that they have. And so they've been slow, and we've all been slow to thinking that we're ready to make major changes in what I personally have. And given that that's the case, two ways we can go. One is simply trying to have a plan for all of the uninsured that we expect to be the safety net that's going to grow over time. Or we just say, hey, let's at least cover the kids and promise to keep them in for their lifetime. That way, if it takes 50 years to get to universal coverage, at least we will have started somewhere.
Why not start at the other end with the older folks who have been paying into the system for 60 years?
Well, so you could start with, we already have everybody over 65 in Medicare. And yeah, you could extend downward. You could take each year going backward. The point of including the kids is, number one, they're inexpensive, and we can get it on our budget. Number two, you can promise a generation that they will always be covered. And, you know, we've gone more than 50 years of trying to fix this system. We've been hobbled by a system where we tie our health insurance to our jobs, and that's been hurting the businesses and the people who have the coverage, and we have to sever that link somehow. And having a generation that does that is at least the minimum place to start.
Mm-hmm. Karen Politz, let me ask you: is there a system in the world that works well we could emulate?
Well, I think there are lots of systems in the world that cover all of the residents of their nation. And we really stand out for not being one of those. And that's truly a shame. There are systems that are single payer. There are systems where the whole health care system is nationalized. There are systems that have a combination of government programs and private coverage. I think any of those would be fine for us to pursue. The trick seems to be, how do we get from here to there, and how do we get the political backing to move from here to there?
Right.
Atul was right. People are worried about how will getting to reform affect me, how much might it change my coverage, how much more might I have to pay. And that seems to be the sticking point.
Better the devil I know than the one I don't know.
Well, except, as he pointed out, the devil we know is getting worse and worse. And there has been persistent concern, I think, on behalf of many Americans that the system we have isn't as dependable as we need it to be, and that those other people who are getting in trouble in the system today might be us tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Stuart Altman, Massachusetts has a new plan, and people are looking at that state and saying, wow, maybe it could work in my state or on the national level. Can you summarize what's going on there for us?
Sure. And again, I very much support what Atul said, and as a matter of fact, Massachusetts just builds just from where he is. There are a couple of key aspects of Massachusetts. First of all, it starts with coverage and said, let's cover everyone first, and then we will move to deal with costs. And in doing that, in covering everyone, it puts everyone into the picture. It says, let's build from our current system. True, everyone has these wild ideas of how to do things better. Let's start from scratch. The reality is what Atul said, that most of us have coverage. We're very nervous about somebody taking it away and asking us to do it differently. So what Massachusetts said is, all right, let's build from our current system, look for the people who don't have coverage, and ask a combination of government, the employers, and most of all the individuals to help make it add up to 100%. So we ask government to sort of fill in and increase its subsidy to low-income people. Under 100% of poverty, they get a complete subsidy, and above that there is a sliding scale subsidy up to about 300% of poverty, which for some families could be over $50,000. Then it says to individuals, everybody in the state of Massachusetts must have health insurance. And as I said, we as the government will help you where we can, but it is your responsibility to buy insurance. And if you don't, you will be penalized ultimately by not being able to have a tax deduction on your state income tax. But we will help you. If you're an individual, we will work to pool insurance so that you won't be hit. You can't be hit as an individual because you have high costs, or you can't be hit as an individual with high administrative costs. So there's a pooling arrangement. And as again, if you have low income or moderate income, we will help you, but everybody has to have it. And the reason is what was said before, because now we spend billions of dollars when people get sick and they go to the emergency room, or they go to the neighborhood hospital, or they go to our health centers or our big teaching hospitals, and sometimes get hundreds of thousands of dollars of free care. And then it falls back on those of us who pay our bills.
Mm. We're talking about health care this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. And so they would help. They would say everybody has to have health insurance, and we'll help you get it if you can't afford it, and we'll penalize you if you don't want to.
That's right. And this is the first time that in the U.S., or for that matter that I know of in the world, that you do have what is called an individual mandate. And that is that – and requires every individual to buy insurance.
Now it's been on the books for about a year now. How's it doing?
Well, it's being implemented in phases. The first phase was, in some sense, the easiest, where the government came in and said, okay, this is free, and sign up, and it's done very well. Over 60,000 people signed up. Now we're into phase two, and then July 1, phase three. Phase two is between 100 and 300%, and that's going well. And they've just made a set of decisions that says as of July 1, everyone should be covered. Now, I should point out that there's going to be a small group of individuals who are just above that poverty, that threshold of 300%, that there is a maximum amount that they would consider to be affordable. And if they don't buy it and it's too expensive, they will not be penalized. And that's the critical piece. And that goes into effect on July 1. Mm. So up to now, it's working pretty well. But we're heading to what I would call the critical phase.
Karen Pollitz, any comment?
Well, I think Stuart's given a great description, and your other guest earlier, Chris, was talking about California being the first, but Massachusetts is actually moving ahead. They're not just talking, and they are implementing. And I think we all should pay attention to what's going on there. There's, I think, some nervousness that it may not work completely perfectly the first time out, and that's okay. Lots of things don't the first time. The areas where there may be some problems, as Stuart indicated, there may not be enough money that's been set aside initially to help people pay for good, affordable health care. 300% of poverty sounds like a lot of money, but poverty is actually a very little amount of money, so 300% of not much is still not a very impressive income. And folks who are earning just above that level where assistance cuts out may have some trouble, and the state may need to come back. And I think another kind of key detail that often gets lost in these discussions is what do we mean by health insurance? What's covered? This is something that Massachusetts has had to really struggle with. What is it that people have to have? It's easy to have affordable health insurance that doesn't cover much. And I think Massachusetts has tried to put together some packages that are comprehensive, but we'll have to see. We'll have to see if all of the policies that are for sale actually do provide adequate protection. If they don't, then we've required people to buy coverage that still leaves them vulnerable when they get sick, and that's not good either. So I think we will need to keep an eye on these details and work on perfecting them if it's not exactly right the first time. But I do think the state has put together a lot of the key components that we would need to get everybody covered securely.
All right, we're going to take a short break, come back, and talk more with Karen Pollitz, Atul Gawande, and Stuart Altman. And your calls. Lots of people have calls. This is a hot topic. We'll try to take as many calls as we can when we get back, because you're covering on your calls the same issues we'd like to talk about. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A brief program note. Remember that kid Josh Waitzkin, the chess prodigy from the book and movie Searching for Bobby Fischer? Well, he's now 30 years old, and on Monday's Talk of the Nation, he's going to join Neil Conan to talk about that whirlwind experience and about his new book, The Art of Learning. Speaking of whirlwind, we're talking this hour about health care reform with my guest, Atul Gawande, who's author of Better, A Surgeon's Notes on Performance, Stuart Altman of Brandeis University, and Karen Pollitz at Georgetown University's Health Policy Institute. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Yolanda in Kansas City, welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you. I'm a family physician here, and I work in an inner-city practice as well as work in rural emergency rooms. And I'm sick of the system. I'm actually considering even possibly quitting because it's just hassling all the time with insurance companies for those patients who do have insurance, trying to make sure that they have, that I've got the right formulary in mind. There are 50 different formularies for Medicare in Kansas, and am I giving them the right medicine that's covered or not, or having to call for prior authorization? It's crazy. The patient suffers, my staff, we suffer here. I see patients who have no insurance. Eventually, we need a national health plan. We need a single-payer plan. It needs to be single-payer so that everyone, you don't have a two-tier system, everyone has the same coverage, and you're going to get better coverage for everyone that way. Mm-hmm. Eventually, we all pay for it right now. If you wait until people have health care crises and end up in your ER with a health care, you know, crashing basically, if they're going to get taken care of and we're all going to pay for it, and that patient is going to pay for it with decreased quality of life. Why not do what your mom used to teach, you know, stitching time saves nine. Let's put the money up front. Let's take care of people. Let's make sure they have access to primary care. And, you know, I think our health care costs would be less. Other countries have done that. We built prisons. We spent millions on prisons. And yet a lot of the folks in the prisons are mental health patients that have problems. Why not make sure we have good mental health for them so we don't have to build the prisons and we can divert costs that way? I mean, it would make so much sense.
Yolanda, I hear you're venting.
I am. I'm just saying the strength of the country is in the health and the education of its people, and we're not spending our money in where the health of the people.
Let me take one point at a time. Let me ask Atul, because in his book, Better, he writes, it's a war with insurance every step of the way. And let's focus on the insurance companies, Atul, and you describe it in your book, the war with the insurance companies.
Oh, I can't tell you how frustrated. I mean, I agree with her frustrations enormously. The way I get paid, and I talk exactly about how I get paid, is it has nothing to do with how good a doctor I am. I make more money if I'm better at knowing how to fight with insurers. So, you know, we hire a couple extra administrators so that we make sure we get all the referral numbers in their proper digits put down, and that we, you know, collect the we even buy the software package that they buy so that we can anticipate the rejections that they'll automatically put through. And it's not, you know, I know how to make, I can figure out how to make money this way, but it's not good care. It's not about being an effective doctor. And it's also, you know, I was on the phone yesterday trying to get help for a 19-year-old with extensive thyroid cancer it operated on. She has not gotten her radiation therapy and because she doesn't have the cash or the insurance for it. And I'm spending time on the phone trying to figure out how I can get her radiation therapy. And so, you know, the experience of being on this side as the doctor, or on the other side as the patient when the rejection comes through, or you just don't have it there.
Yeah.
You know, we're up to 28% of our country who now spends part of the year without insurance. So that alone is just enormous frustration.
I know of a doctor who just set up her own. She left a larger practice, set up her own practice, and one of the first hires that she did was somebody who does nothing but deal with the insurance companies.
Ira, this is Stuart. Yes. I know it's kind of like free reign and enjoyable just to beat up on insurance companies. I'm not here to defend them. And I feel the pain of the primary care physician, and I have nothing but respect for them. But if she thinks that going to an all-government single payer would end her travails, she is so sadly mistaken. We can line up thousands, if not tens of thousands of doctors who all they do is rail against Medicare. Now, I happen to be covered by Medicare. I'm a Medicare fan. But the truth of the matter is, no matter who is the payer, whether it's government or the private, there will be these harangues. And the reason why is health care is very expensive, and everyone's trying to figure out little ways of solving it. The only way that these other countries work where you don't have it is they get a fixed budget. They say, here's a certain amount of money. Do the best job we can. We'll see you next year. And if the budget's inadequate, do the best job you can. That's all you're getting. So you don't have to fight with them day to day, but you have inadequate resources. So unfortunately, no matter who is the insurer, whether it's private or government, we will have these harangues. It's the nature of a $2.2 trillion industry, which is growing at 10 to 15% a year, and people don't want to pay for it.
Karen.
Well, this is Karen. Let me jump in. I would just add to that, though, that the vast multiplicity of insurers has gotten to the point where it's silly. I mean, Atul, what's a chest X-ray cost? How many prices are there for a chest X-ray?
There are a lot.
There are thousands. I mean,
I work with upwards of 30 insurers in order to run my own practice. And here's the reality, though. Karen and Stu, I mean, you are completely right. I work with Medicare. I've worked in the VA, where it's a completely paid for system, and I've worked with the private insurers. I think the biggest we're not going to get rid of the frustrations over how you get paid. Stu's exactly right, and there's lots of ways to simplify this. I think our reality is we're not willing to jump to any system. And at this point, having one would be the direction that would move us forward. And I'm willing to grab onto any of them.
Can anybody can anybody explain to me Medicare Part D?
I can.
I have, I mean, we all have known people who are literally doctors, patients, your mother, your friend, banging their heads against the wall trying to figure this out.
Yes, well, I kid this, and so I'm really sympathetic to that. But as consultants, we're the big winners because it's people like me that go around the country trying to explain this impossible system to everybody, and it's made us, you know, I could spend my life just explaining this system.
Why can't we simplify it instead? Why can't we revoke it? Why can't we do something with it?
Ira, it is, in one level, it is very simple. We were not prepared to pay the $1.2 trillion over 10 years that a full line of coverage for drugs would have cost. And so we settled on, $400 billion, and then we tried to figure out how to do it. You know how other countries do it? They do it in two ways. First of all, they have formularies. They say to doctors, you can't prescribe everything you want. This is what we have in our arsenal, and this is what you use. We think it will work. Second, they do negotiate much tougher with drug companies. On both sides, on the liberal side, the liberals don't want to let formularies. They want doctors and patients to be able to get any drug they want. And on the conservative side, we don't want to regulate drug prices. And so instead, we concocted this wacky program that you talk about to try to save money to keep essentially a $1.2 trillion and $400 million bottle.
1-800-989-8255. Karen in Cleveland. Hi. Welcome to Science Friday.
Hi. Great discussion. Here's my question. My husband and I were in France a few years ago when he ended up with a detached retina. We saw a retinologist that day, and she said that she could do the surgery and keep him in the hospital one day, and knowing that we were not covered by the national health care, I asked her what it would cost. She said it would cost 800 euros, which would be about, $1,000, $1,200?
Mm-hmm.
Why is it so inexpensive there and so expensive here? I spoke with a man yesterday who had his retina reattached in essentially the same way for $26,000.
Atul?
Well, there's lots of reasons. And it wouldn't cost $26,000 on even at my hospital. But it clearly is more expensive here than elsewhere. And you add in, we pay our doctors better. That's part of it. We have more technology and more willingness to use technologies. We have more outpatient visits. We have sort of more of everything thrown in, including the medications, and we don't restrict it tightly. So that adds up to being this, what people estimate to be about a $500 billion overage. And then you can also add in the insurance administration and the people I hire to, you know, make sure we get our insurance bills not rejected and those kinds of things coming in.
Karen, any comment?
No, that's a pretty good, I guess the last thing is that we tend to spend more, the studies that have looked comparatively, because we have more. There's also some very simple supply and demand going in here.
Well,
we are the wealthiest nation, and we spend more on everything.
I was talking to a doctor the other day who says, you know, I can take my whole family to India for a vacation and have my surgery done over there for half the price, including the vacation, for what it would cost to have it done here. And there's a whole industry growing up now, isn't there, about these vacations?
Yes.
I mean, what do you think? Karen, thanks for calling, Karen, in Cleveland. It's getting bordering on the ridiculous now, is it not?
Well, there is this issue. Let's face it. I think that's the same thing is true of practically anything, including the hotel itself. But as Atul said, we have developed a very expensive system that has certain advantages that we tend to sort of play down. We have access that few other countries, if any other country, do. I mean, Atul works in really a first-class institution, which is about 20 miles from me. I will bypass three hospitals to make sure that if I'm sick, I'm going to be in Atul's emergency room, and if I need somebody to operate, it's going to be him. In other places, you are assigned an institution, and you go there. And every time we've tried to control spending, people rebel. I was the first regulator for healthcare costs back in the early 1970s, and I'll never do that again. I mean, you cannot imagine. So the government failed. Then we asked managed care, and managed care failed. Our country is kind of quixotic about this. We don't want to spend the money, but we don't want to have any constraints, and we're always blaming somebody else for the problem. At the end of the day, if we want the healthcare system that we're used to, it's going to cost a lot of money. Not as much as it currently costs. We could do better, but there's no way we're going to introduce a France system or an English system that Americans are going to be happy with.
Why?
I mean, because we're used to a system. Well, anything could start, you can start from scratch. But as Atul said, we want
our choices. We want it to be just the way we like it. Not be assigned a doctor or a hospital.
Editorials are just right on. We want what we're used to. We want complete choice. We want easy access. I can get open heart surgery if I decide I had nothing to do tomorrow in 4 or 5 of the best places in the world within 20 minutes of here. You can't do that in other countries.
We're talking about healthcare this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News, talking with Atul Gawande, author of Better, A Surgeon's Notes on Performance, Stuart Altman of Brandeis University, and Karen Pollitz at Georgetown. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Was that Atul? Was that you jumping in there?
That was me. You know, what it is, we've decided that we'd have a safety valve for when our expenses become too much. And our safety valve is the employer can dump you out of your insurance or they can make you pay more of it. And so we grow the number of uninsured. Like we've decided in Massachusetts, say, okay, everybody's going to be in. Then you're saying that you're going to have all these arguments about exactly how you want to control the cost. But once you've got everybody in, then the discussion can happen.
Absolutely.
And we're already starting to have that here. You know, are we going to raise taxes to pay for the increased cost of insuring these uninsured? If not, then what do we want to cut? Do we want to cut the drug coverage? Do we want to have this be there are almost any number of ways, that all of which your callers have brought up.
Well, let me ask you this question. How in the Massachusetts model do you keep the cost of the drugs down? Apart from buying them in Canada, which is,
right.
You know, what
well,
do you
so
do
one
there?
Of the things, one of the things that will happen is right now this plan it's not going to be bigger than about 5% of the state. But as employers dump out of insurance coverage, it's going to grow. And then people are going to ask, can this insurer negotiate directly with the pharmaceutical companies? They'll be powerful. You know, we haven't let Medicare negotiate directly with pharmaceutical companies for lower costs and having a formulary that limits some of the options. And it brings up lots of arguments that people will have publicly about it. You know, are people ready to see this? The fight with the pharmaceutical companies, and then also some of the limited choices on a formulary, but that's the options before us.
Could you join forces with other states who are doing this and then become a bigger buying pool?
Absolutely.
It isn't the buying pool that really is going to affect drug prices. What drug companies are prepared to give discounts for is their ability to get a sort of a leg up with their competitors, which requires formularies, which requires states or big institutions to say yes for that drug and no for that drug. It's not size. We have found that out. You know, when the reason why the VA gets lower prices is it limits the drugs that it uses, hopefully to the right combination. So it won't limit drugs that are useful. In other words, if there's a choice of A, B, and C to do the same thing, it'll pick the one that it can get the lowest price. So we need to make tough choices among ourselves. So I'm all in favor of lowering our spending. I think we are spending ourselves into a very serious problem. But we have to recognize that the part of the problem is us as patients.
How is this? I got about 30 seconds left. Are the states then going to continue to do this, or do we see any national leadership happening here?
I think some states will keep going at it. Certainly Massachusetts is leading the pack now. Maybe California will be coming. If we think that all 50 states are going to be accomplishing what Massachusetts has done, that's probably not going to happen. A lot of states just don't have that kind of tax base. They don't have the kind of head start with extra federal money and through the Medicaid system that Massachusetts had. They don't have the same politics. And ultimately, we need to fix this as a nation. It's just not right that people should not have the same kinds of protection, the same access to health care, just because they live 50 miles away from someone else.
All right. We've run out of time. This is obviously going to be a continued topic of discussion. Karen Politz, research professor and project director at Georgetown's Health Policy Institute. Atul Gawande, author of Better, A Surgeon's Notes on Performance. Terrific book. If you're looking for an interesting book on a doctor's life, this is one to read. He's also a surgeon at Brigham and Women's Hospital, assistant professor at Harvard Med School. Stuart Altman, dean and Saul C. Chaykin professor of national health policy at the Hellis School for Social Policy and Management at Brandeis in Waltham, Massachusetts. Thank you all for taking time to be with us today. Kimberly Jones is our technical director. Our audio engineers are Josh Rogerson and Manya in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. And we had help today from NPR librarian Key Molesky. Comments or questions, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Leave us email there. Also, Science Friday's Kids Connection is there. Free teaching material for you to help teach science in your classrooms. Just click on the teachers button. Also, we're podcasting, blogging, and we've got videos, some interesting new videos coming up. Looking for your videos, just drop us a line if you have some you'd like to contribute. They're beginning to come in. Have a great weekend. We'll see you next week. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.